To the young people now start up, I will say the same thing. If you're not ready for controlling your costs, don't start.
And of course, I think like a lot of people know that you are the owner of Harvey Norman in this part of the world, and also World of Sports. Just very curious, because I think your level of diversification is very interesting. I mean, from shoes to real estate, retail appliances, also to sportswear. Where do you learn all this like business building skills? Who was your mentor? One of your interviews, you mentioned that a lot of people only like to talk about success. Sometimes when you want to mentor people or you want to share your business experience, you also like to share with them the hard truth about building businesses. Which is,
so you must have this idea. Can you learn fast enough if you want to charter the big boat?
What is the meaning of life in your perspective?
Don't only build this thing all the way. You think you must build this way, you make you more become a more happier person. No.
All right, so today we have a special guest. We are very excited to have Mr. George Goh with us on Nuggets on the Go. And of course, I think for George, he needs no formal introduction. You have already seen him on a lot of mainstream media. George, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Marwin, for the invitation.
Right.
Thank you for the cruise member. Thank you so much.
Right. Yeah. Good to have you in our studio.
Yeah.
In fact, this is the first time we're doing like a one-to-one interview. We usually have like a banter podcast interview with a couple of my teammates.
Okay.
I think today we want to chat really more about your business, as well as I think our audience will walk away with a lot of key learning points that potentially we can have in this chat. I've looked through your history. I've also seen quite a fair bit of interviews that you have been on. Of course, I think a lot of people already know why you are running for president, as well as your motivation to go into this phase in this current season of your life.
Yes.
Yeah. However, today, I think what a lot of people are very keen to know about is basically your entrepreneurship journey.
Yeah.
So you have, I think, an impressive 41 years, because I've seen some of the interviews that you started your own business at the age of 22.
Yes, right.
Yeah. So maybe let us start there. Right. During that first season, maybe share with us a little bit about how you started your business at the age of 22 years old in the past.
I remember in August 1998, I was in a factory with my older brothers. I got another older brothers. We were discussing about the whole family, entire family.
Mm.
The reason why we are here, because the poverty of the family, right? So I was talking to him. I say, brother, we remain the same when I landed here. We cannot continue the situation like this, because you only earn very little money, a few hundred dollars. In the 80s, it's very small.
Mm.
So hands to mouth, I think this is not so good for the entire family. So after the discussions, I was keep thinking whether I can do something different, or just continue to be a shoemaker. So I say, maybe I can consider the option. Of course, this is not in my plan, you know. It's not. So I went to meet one of the factory bosses. I say, hey, are you hiring? You know? They say, no, we are not hiring.
Mm.
So I say, in this situation, why don't I consider, right? I start something very small. So I was talking to my brothers. You know, I got another two brothers. Beside the twin brothers, I got another youngest brothers. I say, wait, why don't we set up something, a small outfit factory? Try to put a few machines, second-hand machine, together. Of course, the capital is so small, you know, because the saving is so small. Myself, my brothers, my sister, I think it's about 5,000. So the rental is, at the time I say about 500 per month. So it's 1,000, include the deposit. You have to open a bank, account for 1,000 minimum. Then the machine, about maybe 2,000 plus, second-hand machine. So we say, okay, they're good, but left with very little for us to buy the ladder. Fortunately enough, the ladders, the uncle is very kind, because ladder you had to buy in bulk or roll, you know? So we are buying in piece. Merchant was saying that, okay, let's say this is it's a startup, right? So we'll help you. I think that is a wonderful thing. The merchant had given to us in one piece by one piece.
Mm.
You asked me at that time whether I have full plan to be an entrepreneur. Answer is no. But that moment, I say, why not we try? When you don't have anything, right, you think about it. What are you going to lose? So you try something, right? And then you have a skill, right? I have some skill. I know how to make shoes. So that is how finally we make a decision to open a small little shoe factory.
Mm. So that was back in 1982. 82. Right.
The period very short, you know, Melvin. Just about maybe two to three weeks time, we put everything together.
Right. So yourself, your brother.
My brothers. And I invite one friend. So this friend is quite nice. He said, okay, I will come and help you. Because shoe divided into two parts, the upper part and the bottom part. I'm specialized bottom part. My brother is also bottom part. So only my friend is the upper part. Shoe you need to put two together, right? Bottom and the top, then you make a pair of shoes. So he's prepared to come in at the point in time. So I deeply appreciate this gentleman.
Mm. Where do you learn your shoe making skills?
When I landed here, when I was around 15 years old, right? 15 plus. So end up in a small little factory. This factory for you to work at the same time, to stay, and also to sleep at the same place. It's a very small factory in Geylang. So at first, of course, you don't expect too much because boy, right? He's a little boy, 15 years old. So they ask you to become a general staff, you know?
Mm.
So I did that. Coffee boy, or do you call tea boy? Because you need to buy a cup of tea every day for the master, for them to teach you the skill. The only thing for you to make sure you give a good service to the master.
Right.
Then they will teach you how to make a pair of shoes.
How much do you earn that time?
Wow. It's sad to say that it's about per week. They go by per week, not go by per month. In our shoe industry, you go by per week. About $10
per week.
Yeah.
So $40 per month.
Around there. Sometimes not too bad. They give you $15.
Mm.
It's no specific, like around the figure, $10 to $15.
Right. Was your brother in the same factory also?
Yes, my brother is also.
So that's where you pick up the skill. And
we pick up the same skill at the same place.
Right.
Okay, anyway, we appreciate we landed there. So
7 years.
Around 7 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And after 22 years old, once you started your first business,
yeah.
You mentioned that you had a small outfit. Was that like a small factory or shop?
We don't have a facility like your industry building, you know. Mm. I was end up with a terrace house in Bartley Road. Very old terrace house.
Right.
So inter terrace. So we occupied one of the middle one.
Okay.
So a bit older, very old one. So that's why it costs $500 per month.
Right.
So at that time, I think it's okay because we are just started, like, so I don't believe we're going to overnight to have big volume. I don't think so.
Mm.
So because it's handmade, like, it's only a few machines, so I don't think we can do a big productions in thousands of pair. I don't think the point we can do that because we don't have the kind of scale to scale the kind of size.
Mm.
So we thought maybe we slowly build our capacity slowly.
Right.
Yeah, but very painful because we work 16, 18 hours per day.
Mm.
Except Sunday. La.
So, yeah. George, that time when you started, based on what I heard, is with your brother.
Yeah.
Also with a friend. So, three of you. When did that first business, the shoemaking business, really start to kick off? Like, after how many years? Or
I can say from day one, we are quite fortunate or blessed in the sense because we make the rider shoe, motorbike rider shoe.
Oh, okay. For a cyclist.
For the cyclist.
Okay.
So your customer is actually individual. You know? Because I have no idea, actually, you can go to the merchants and go to the shop. Those are, you know, the HDB shop or even the lockup store at the wet market.
Right.
Lockup store at the hawker center, they do have. So at first, we try to make a few pair for these people. But we are not bad. We're charging them quite a reasonable price. Handmade.
Okay.
Handmade, quite good.
Right.
And very colorful boat. It's a boat. Very colorful one. Then after that, we say, hey, our customer, one by one, cannot. How many friends you can...
refer.
refer, you cannot. After a while, you run out of customer, you know.
Okay.
So we say, why don't we supply to the those...
retail shops.
Not really retail. We try to go to the like HDB
shop houses.
Those hawker, those... because their standard at that point in time, they can accept us because we are not branded, right?
Mm.
And our scale of fashion, I don't think we're up to the mark.
In the 1980s.
Go into department store. No.
Right.
But we managed to convince them to say, why do you buy some shoe from us?
Okay.
But we have one very big problem is the cash flow.
Mm.
We do not have enough cash to turn around. So I remember when I discussed with the merchant, I say, can you give it in cash? Because we run out of money. So the merchants is quite good in the sense they say, okay, if cash, we can't pay you in full amount. They say, it's okay, we can give you some discount. But we already marked the pricing. So at the time, luckily, we do about 30 to 40% markup.
Margin, right.
At the time, we don't understand how it work, the GP and all this. We just say, if, let's say the cost $20, right? So 30%, we sell $26. So it's a very simple mathematics. So of course, when we see people accept, then we try to see 40% can accept. No? Then you earn a bit more. Then you minus away some discount, still okay.
Mm. When did you have like your first hire, as in your first few employees in your company?
The volume increased because the order keep coming in.
Mm.
We're young people, one thing good about the young people is you tend to think trendy, right? Or you call fashions, right?
Right.
You look at things quite differently. So same like now, we're talking about a new industry, the young people in social media, similar. Fortunately enough, we can see the thing, right? A bit more trendy.
Mm.
That is the good news.
Mm.
Then we produce something that is more trendy.
Right.
Then because of trendy, of course, you have to refer to some magazine, right?
Mm.
So actually, you got to read how the other fashions at that point in the 80s. So because you're a bit more fashionable, you can mark up a bit more, you know, actually very interestingly.
Right.
So we are making quite a good headway, you know. So the volume keep increasing to a point and we say we cannot, because you only got 12 hours, I have to do delivery. Because we don't have van or car. My brother have a motorbike.
Mm.
So together have to do, because I have to sit at the back, right? And holding the shoe at the back.
Right. And all these shoes were made in the factory by you
in
guys?
In the factory. Then okay. We had to deliver. We had to come back. We do production. We had to go to the leather shop to buy a leather.
Right.
So it's among a few people. It's very difficult. But after a few months, I remember we start to hire someone to see whether can take some of the responsibility. Then we can increase our volume.
Right.
So we are quite blessed in the sense our volume keep going up.
Mm.
So good news is we don't spend because all the fund flow in into the company as a capital.
Right.
I remember almost every morning, if I'm not wrong, teh tarik and bread.
Mm.
Actually, the one quite young, you know, 22 years old, you eat this. But anyway, we were particular about spending.
Right.
All the fund will flow in. So that make us in a slightly better position. That means we build our capital base.
Mm.
That means our outflow less, right? Our inflow more.
Right.
So So that's why our balance sheet at that point in time slowly built up.
Right.
Yeah, not too bad.
So you're very prudent at the initial stage of your business part.
To the young people now startup, I will say the same thing. If you're not ready for controlling your cost, don't start. Because no way, unless your parents say, son, I prepare to give you 1 million or 2 million. I don't think so. Ordinary family like me, I mean Singapore, 80, 90% are ordinary people. So you do not have the kind of capital start at a million or 2 or 3 million. No way you can do that.
Yeah.
Mentality you must have. I think there are 2-3 points you must have if you want to start. First, there is no shortchange. Make sure it works very hard. Because you can't employ so many people.
Yeah.
So most likely you must be also the workforce. Number two, you must keep remind yourself cost control is the most important thing. Because you do not have a lot of money, right? The only way is for you to have cost control.
Yes.
All right? So fortunate enough, these two things make us, in the sense, we are controlling quite well.
Right.
And we also controlling another one is we focus on our core business. We didn't go somewhere else, you know.
So you focus on the shoe business.
I just focus on that. I know that this industry may be sunset because the government say textile industry, shoe industry may need to move to
overseas.
Overseas. Mm. But we still keep it the first few years in Singapore.
Right.
But we can because our cost structure is quite good. We move from Bartley Road, then we expand. We cannot hold anymore because we sleep there, we eat in the same place, and we work in the same place.
Mm.
So we cannot. Then we move it to Geylang East. So the government flat. So we rent about 2 units.
Right.
Up there. Then we put up the renting flat. Then we expand a little bit scale. So we are quite happy because we can expand into two units. That means we are expanding.
Right.
From Geylang East, then it's about 1984. I say, why not? Let's do some trading instead of just making.
Mm.
Because if I do trading, the momentum is faster.
Right.
You buy, sell, right? You buy low and sell high. Right? So making, you know, right, is pair by pair. So, but anyway, we are running both now.
Okay.
So manufacturing continue. We import quite a lot of shoe from Hong Kong.
Right.
That still we in the same industry. That is the shoe industry.
Right.
So now I have both income.
Right.
In the same facility.
Right.
In the same staffer. So I think that's quite good. I mean, our margin will keep going upward, because cost low.
So you open up one more stream of revenue.
Exactly.
Right. And just now you mentioned about focusing on your niche, right? That means you believe that once you find a niche, which is in the shoe business,
yes,
then you want to double down on that and that portion.
Got it.
Maybe let's fast forward to today, and then later we go back to talk about that particular company, which is very interesting. How many companies do you own now?
I lost count, let me see this way, because I only asked my CFO today to list out all the company because I need to know some history. Because I like to take the most active company, it's about 100 over companies.
Right.
So that 41 years, you know.
About 100 over companies.
100 over.
Yeah. One of your interviews, you mentioned that a lot of people only like to talk about success.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you want to mentor people or you want to share your business experience, you also like to share with them the hard truth about building businesses, which is also the failure part.
Correct.
How many of these companies were successful, and then how many were basically like didn't make it? I mean, like in the whole journey.
Those are listed one because when you're listed, you know the market capitalizations or the foundation of the company are more stable.
Right.
The private owned one, that's why people always have private owned and public listed. They're both chains.
Right.
They're both. So maybe, you know, over the years, about 2007 was my seventh listed company. Right. So from the 1996 first listed company. Then I remember 1997, the second one. 1999, the third one. 2000, I add two more from five listed company. 2004, another one. The last one was in
2007. So, averagely, every 3 years, you list one company?
Around there, around three. So, I was fairly aggressive. I think maybe the age is also quite right. Between, you see, in 2007, how old am I? 48 years old, right?
Right.
So, if you look at that, over the 25 years, so between the 20 young men to become 40s, I think about the right. So, you work quite hard and quite aggressive.
Right.
That period. But after that, I'm not say slowing down, so I don't want to go in the same way what I'm doing. I keep listing a new company. Not that easy to maintain also. The most difficult part, success one, of course, you get listed.
Right.
The difficult one is the 2000 when the .com burst.
Right.
In 1998-1999, everybody must talk about .com. If you don't talk about .com,
you lose out.
You are not fashionable guy.
Just like now, everybody needs to talk about AI.
Exactly right. The same. Or you call the chat GPT.
Right.
You must talk something about that. Right. So in 1998-1999, still okay. But in 2000, I think the world see the entire .com quite differently. So, of course, someone realized cannot. The PE mean price to ratio. How can you value a company to 1,000 times? Just not sustainable.
Right.
Not possible at all.
Right. So there was a lot of like overvaluation.
Overvaluation, and actually the support asset base is very small.
So there was a lot of hype.
A lot of hype, a lot of concept, a lot of play in terms of executive. Who you hire. So you build from the big organization like Morgan Stanley. So you talk about Goldman Sachs. Wow, you talk about all the big name. Or you're from Microsoft. Wow, my goodness. Don't play a fool. The value can go just because of the individual were from a good company, you know. So I think that one, I listed the one technology company. I acquired quite a lot. But no choice, some during the burst. When they burst, the certain painful decision. But you're very, very great. You can get it listed. But when they burst, some company cannot sustain. So your cash flow will be affected.
Right.
So some founding. Some we are partner with some other tech guy. Some will not sustain because if you don't inject further money, you will just have to go burst. You know? So many people cannot make it during the period.
Right.
Very difficult time is 2000, 2001, 2002. So you look at all these, I'm not sure now people still talk about it, but that one hit, you look at the COVID also happened the same time, right? 2000, 2001.
Right.
So these are coming together. Right? COVID affected the whole worldwide.
Right.
So hit both ways. It's a little bit similar like the dot-com time. Yeah. So last year, a lot of company had to go bust, right?
Right.
And then those cannot sustain, they had to wipe up completely. So fortunate enough, I'm not in that space. If I go back to my, at the 20s or 30s, I may consider that also. Right? But fortunate enough, I didn't. Went into this space.
Right.
So not so painful. But only the period of the lockout period on the COVID. So COVID time, you have to hold your ship as tight as possible.
Right.
There's no other alternative because the whole worldwide is affected. Nobody can travel. And the worldwide, you cannot say only affected Asia Pacific. Also in United States. Right. Everywhere. So that one is a very challenging 2 years.
Yeah. That was a challenging period for, I think, a lot of businesses. I think like just now when you share about your experience, seven listed companies, and then you also talk about your company that failed during the dot-com season.
Yes.
What about the very first company that you started out? I mean, now, what is that company called?
Melvin, you hit the right spot.
Mm.
When I get listed in 1996, so there's some money coming in, right?
Right. Was that the first company?
I listed, yeah.
Right.
The one, of course, is not a property company. But I start to look at whether property development. So we incorporate a company called Wuxia Land.
Mm.
Then I, of course, as usual, so I will buy land in Singapore, we'll buy in UK. Location is good. One is the Newton area. One is UK is at Kensington.
Mm.
So Kensington is very easy to explain. From the apartment, you can see Princess Diana House.
Right.
Also beautiful, right? Location cannot be wrong. But you can choose the best location. I know property people like to say location, location, location.
Mm.
But you can choose a bright location. But the financial crisis, Asia financial crisis, 1997.
Yep.
Start from Thailand. Then the domino effect is hit this part of the world, Singapore as well. Property is, you know, you need the bank, you know, to support you.
Yeah.
There's no, without bank support, you can't go into property because the asset base. So the high gearing. So the bank, of course, will start to, you know, to go. We like you as a person, but the weather is very bad now. Mm-hmm. So you have to do something, right? Bank, of course, good time is not an issue. When crisis like this, as a CEO of organizations, you have to make a certain decision. But very pain decision because we just started this division, so-called of the brothers. We are three brothers founder. Mm. So we had to decide to say, that why not we cut it off?
As in the property development arm. Mm. Right.
So I thought this is going to be, if I can stay, so today, if I can overcome in 1998, so today my property development arm is quite sizable, I believe.
Mm.
But we know how to spot the right location and the right price, but just cannot support it because your interest rate is weird. You cannot support.
Mm.
No cash flow.
Right.
Property development is different from you buy and sell, right? Ready stock.
Mm.
But you cannot. We are manufacturing. Mm. We are manufacturing means you have to produce, you have to make a couple of years before you're on the market. You must have a deep pocket for that.
Right. So you started the business 1982 from a shoemaking business.
Mm.
You grew into a trading business.
Trading, yeah.
Eventually, you opened a property development arm.
Yes.
But in 1998, you cut off that arm.
Yes.
And then now you build it back. And that company is Wuxia International.
Yes.
Right.
Correct.
And of course, I think like a lot of people know that you are the owner of Harvey Norman in this part of the world and also World of Sports. Yeah. As well, yeah. Just very curious because I think, like, your level of diversification is very interesting. I mean, from shoes to real estate, and then to retail appliances, also to sportswear. Of course, World of Sports has shoes and all that as well. Like, where do you learn all this like business building skills? Who is your mentor? Who was your mentor?
If you look at the shoe was 1982. I mean, 94 trading is similar industry. No much changes. It's just only import the different.
Right.
86 to 90, we are more like a wholesale, like import and exporter.
Right.
From Taiwan, from Hong Kong. It's also interrelated. Children, women's shoes, men's shoes. Mm. Interrelated.
Right.
In 90, we changed slightly, the strategy changed after 8 years. We say, why don't we represent certain brand, international brand?
Mm.
So 1990s, we traveled to United States. We brought in the sports shoe. That is the first time we represent a good so-called international brand. But from there to 1996, we are very focused. We bring in quite a lot of brand, included Prince Racket.
Right.
Shoe, Prince Racket. Roller blade, I don't know, you know in East Coast people use the roller blade. And many, many other brands as well.
Right.
So during the 1990 to 96, maybe we acquire maybe 10 to 15 brands.
Right.
We travel quite often to Germany.
Trade shows and all that.
Trade show.
Mm.
when you go to the trade show as a young man, you can walk from the morning 9 o'clock to the shut and 6 o'clock. So we did quite well in the sense the 6 year as an international brand. But to me, I think the industry about the same. Not much changes. Only 1997, the second listed company, Rebel, is a retail retailer. So sport retailing in Australia and New Zealand. But also quite close to my 1996, the industry, quite close. We still focus, you can see, still more or less in the same. I can't see so much different. The only difference is in 1999. That's where the Harvey Norman. When I met the owner, he founded the company. He very good. He know his industry very well. And he doing very well. So I'm in this part of the world. He's in Australia, New Zealand.
Right.
So I invite him to say, why don't we form a partnership? You see, when you don't understand your industry, right? There's another thing you can do. Find a partner who understands the industry. He understands the industry. I only know my market. I already in Asia Pacific, Hong Kong, Australia. So we already cover quite a fair bit. Taiwan. What I have is the territory.
Right.
I'm familiar because I set up my subsidiary. He have the expertise in the industry. That's why we form a joint venture. So there's a different. If I'm on my own, I'm not sure I can make it. So because my partner is very good, so we form a partnership. So that in 1999, I can consider this is electrical, electronic, beddings and furniture is our next venture.
Right.
Yeah.
And subsequently, technology and then into many other businesses.
Technology, of course, I have to depend much on all the techie, right? All the technopreneurs, so-called. You know, they have a lot of ideas. You ask me whether, George, are you familiar with technology? It's very hard.
Right.
From software in India, right, all the way to e-commerce. Our e-commerce in China is ahead of Alibaba. But sometimes ahead may not be a good idea. So we have a group of very talented people from America. It's a mainland Chinese study in America. They work in America, all the big company. They form a company, e-commerce. But because they are ahead, timing is all about business. Sometimes also about timing, you know.
Right.
You cannot be too fast, you know.
Cannot be too slow. So
you cannot be too slow. Too slow, you get nothing.
Right.
All right. Sometimes you just get it right, you know. So I think we are ahead of all these people. Then after that, we heard about Alibaba. It's a waste, actually. It's a very talented people. All the people we put together, we put quite a fair bit of money into China.
Right.
So market is already correct. It's already sitting in
China. It's just
the
timing.
You see, the time our team is quite good. In India, so the business model is very similar to Infosys. Also right. The space is correct, you know. So this in China, e-commerce, also right.
Right.
But just didn't make it.
Mm.
If both make it, if this make it like Infosys or Satyam, there's another company called Satyam or HCL, another company. If one of these make it, right, today I may be the Jack Ma, you know. But this not
Jack Ma of Singapore, yeah.
Yeah, but because we already in the right country.
Right.
Both is the population 1.3, right, billion, right. So it's correct. Timing just wrong.
Right. So I'm very interested to know, like you mentioned about timing, which is one of the business principles. Do you even have a mentor or you learn everything through experience over all these years? Like who taught you the business principles or do you read a lot? Do you read widely? Where do you pick up all your skills from?
One thing I like is I like to read. Because today people talk about online.
Yeah.
We don't. I'm talking about paper. So I quite enjoy in the sense, the trend, paper sometimes can give you some idea about the trend. Because news supposed to be ahead, like, cannot be behind us, it should be ahead. So paper and magazine, I like magazine also. Wherever I go in the plane or where I will read one.
Right.
Because magazine another plus point, they will give you all the trend of the new phone, they will give you all the new technology, they will give you a new architecture, they will give you... You keep learning, it's like our brain is like a database. Right? You keep learning new things. I like to see architecture. I love architecture.
Mm.
So you keep learning new things from a paper, from this, from here. Of course, I also listen BBC.
Right.
So there's one part about self-learning, not sufficient enough. Fortunate enough, because I'm the international organization already. So I travel to Germany, France, UK, United States, Italy, Spain, so India, China. So that gave me a lot of advantage of international exposure. I met three group of people internationally, close to 20 countries.
Right.
You ask me whether I got mentor.
Mm.
These are the mentor.
Mm.
They push you to the level you become a very good entrepreneur.
Right.
So we learn quite a fair bit from all these people. When we met them, you can see.
Mm.
But of course, you must have an attitude going there, just not only for wine or German, you're talking about beer. You can do that. But right. If you're serious about it, you can learn a lot of things from them.
Right. So that was during the years of when you went to a lot of trade shows, international expansion.
Exactly.
And, right. In the end, what was the working relationship with the Benetton family? I mean,
if you cannot produce results, do you think they will keep you?
Mm.
They won't. These people are very clear.
Right.
As I mentioned, people who own the brand, they're not only talking about revenue sales. They're also talking about you can protect the brand in this part of the world. If you take, because we took quite a few countries
right.
from Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, Brunei, Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, China.
Right.
When you can cover so many countries, they view you quite different. You must be somebody that they trust you a lot.
Mm.
If not, you will not happen. So I have some exposure in this area. If you combine together, not too bad.
Mm. So you actually learn, I would say, like through the years of exposure and experience and basically through all these challenges and also wanting to make sure that you can really deliver results through the years, right? Yeah, so maybe I think what would be very useful for younger audiences is that if you can break down what is one to two key success principles when it comes to business, what will these two principles be? Before we move to, very interested to talk about your education journey as well, because I know recently you obtained a degree in opera and classical music as well. So maybe to sum up for the business principles part, what are two key success principles that you have learned over the years?
For the young people, what I suggest, if you want to become an entrepreneur, make sure the industry you're going in, you're familiar.
Mm.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
In 1982, I have another friend, also just same year, we started the same year, the hair salon.
Mm.
Just a husband and a wife and a brother, three of them. Day and night cut.
Right.
I don't know what they hire, maybe hire one or two. Today, this family, is one of the most successful entrepreneur. So I say, if a hairstylist can make it, right? A shoemaker like myself make it. You see, our industry is the same one because they are hairstylists.
Mm.
So they cut day and night.
Right.
I'm a shoemaker, I day and night making shoe.
Mm.
To the young people, I will say, what are you familiar? You don't go and share with me, say, my friend was telling me, robotics is a very good industry. Chat GPT is very good. Let's go into it. You don't understand, no point. But don't worry about your first industry, where you're going. You can diversify later.
Mm.
You can. Just like yourself, Melvin, you have 100 and 100 stuff under you now. If one day you think about it, can you become one day to become a developer? Of course, it's the nature. What you need to do is not set up here, just set up another development. So maybe one day you because you know the location, you know the costing of purchasing price, you also know the cost of the construction cost.
Mm.
You also know where to get all the contractor, subcontractor from head to toe. You know that because you met so many people in your life. So what I'm trying to say to the young man, please, go into the industry, number one, you're familiar. It's okay. Doesn't matter what industry.
Don't be distracted.
Focus on that part. And maybe 1 year, 2 years. Because you are very familiar, right?
Mm.
So of course you hold differently, right? Just like a boat or motorbike or whoever, right? If you are very familiar, you will ride very careful, easily for you to do, right?
Mm.
If you keep thinking of, oh, some friend was telling me this industry very good, just jump into it. Oh my goodness. That one I a bit worried on that.
Right.
Yeah. This is the key principle. The second principle, if you say, oh, now I become entrepreneur, I'm more or less like BOSS boss, right? That one is a clothing brand called Boss. Forget about the boss. You understand? No? You just have to think, can you work hard or not?
Mm.
16 hours to 18 hours, can you do it? If you can do it, then please welcome to be an entrepreneur. Because entrepreneur, all work is very hard.
Right.
There is no other shortcut you can do it.
Yes.
So third one, I say all the time, from the day one, control your cost. Regardless of anything, include a bottle of water you buy.
Right.
If you can buy a container, please buy a container. If you cannot, at least buy in bulk, make sure it's direct from the source, 50 cents from Malaysia.
Right.
So don't go and buy from a merchant $2. They make no sense to us at all.
Right.
So these are the 3 points.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, focus on your niche, be prepared to work hard, and of course,
control your costing.
Let's talk about education.
Okay.
Right. Where do you get the motivation to take up a degree? And furthermore, it's in music. Has music always been your passion since young?
Yeah. Music, I have two stages of my life. When I was 20s, I remember.
Mm.
And because I do not have a very successful business, right, at the time. So I was in the choir. So the music conductor was very kind to me. They say, George, please consider to learn some music. So I say, okay. I'm so young, right? I say, yeah.
Well, how old were you back then?
20 plus.
You were in the choir?
I already in the choir.
Okay. Was it with a school or?
No, in the church choir.
Oh, okay.
So, of course, the conductors may feel, you know, I have the voice. Young people always got big voice, don't worry. Whether it's accurate or not, it's beside the point. So you go and take the theory exam, grade 5, you know. At least you can read the score.
Mm.
I say, okay, why not? So I did it quite well, I think 83 over 99. So after that, the same conductor say, why don't you take your vocal?
Mm.
Like your instrument, like violin or your piano. She say, sing you can sing, right? I say, I have no knowledge how to do it. She say, I will teach you. So very kind of him to say, do it. So grade 5, both grade 5. I passed both exam. But because of my career, as I say, we had to focus, right? So I say, maybe I cannot continue my music. But I remain as a choir member.
In your church?
In the church.
Until singing. Today?
Because I need to focus on my thing.
Mm.
But anyway, so after that, I focused about close to 30 years.
Right.
At the age of 50, I was in the church. One of the conductors said, can you help us to sing one song? Because I moved from one church to another one. It's an English church. So they say, we know you're the singer. Can you help us to sing one song?
Mm.
So I say, okay, sing, I can sing a bit. I say, okay, I will sing. So the song is a very nice song. Actually, it's an Italian song. It's called O Solo Mio. But someone had translated into Down to the Glory.
Mm.
So to me, I only know Down to the Glory. But I know subsequently, I know the music is exactly the same as O Solo Mio. So after that, the coach say, why do you continue learning?
Mm.
I say 50 years old, okay lah. I say, I'm learning, okay. Yeah, once a week, I take it as just an interest, right? And I like, because I travel all the world, I will go to the opera house. This is already me, you know?
Right.
Especially musical.
Mm.
They talk about Phantom or opera and all this.
Right? Right.
I say, okay, we just take a lesson. So after a while, the coach say, hey, think about you take the exam. Ayo, I say this remind me last time I took the exam exactly the same.
Right.
You say, never mind, you just try to go and take advance. The level not so high. La. It's like grade 8, slightly at grade 8. Like.
Mm.
I say, of course, I asked the coach, can? He say, your voice maybe can. Go and try. I will teach you. Yeah. So I say, okay, go and try. So I took first exam. I didn't pass. Then I second, then I pass. So that gave me a very good
motivation.
Yeah. I say, maybe not too bad. After that, we discussed, why don't you go diploma level? Or diploma is quite different. It's from this advanced level to the diploma, it's a big jump.
Mm.
So, of course, I studied the diploma, got ATCL, LTCL, FTCL. There are three, you know. Then I study, I say, hey, LTCL not bad. It's equivalent to honors degree.
Mm.
I say, yeah, maybe I can consider. You know, academic route, you get, most of the people is go through academy, right?
Yeah.
Of course, in Europe and United States, not like that. People have the option. Singing, performing art, all get another option to get a degree. But in our part of the world, Singapore especially, we will always believe it's only have to go to the school to get your certificate. Right. In Europe, it's not like that. So at that time, the coach say, why don't you try? They say, maybe you can. So I say, okay, ATCL.
Mm.
So I went in. Oh my goodness, it's very difficult.
Right.
The song is, because you have to master four languages.
Mm.
So,
what were they?
French, German, Italian. Oh, of course, you put in English. I dare not to sing Chinese. Because I'm not that good at Chinese. To me, it's
congratulations. It is an achievement.
But it's the many, I go through so many
rounds of practice.
But ATCL is already quite difficult.
Mm.
But finally, of course, I see if I can get degree, right? Maybe that is. There is something what is nice to have, right? Because my family, none of us have reached this level.
Mm.
And my dad, my mom, both are not well educated.
Right. What was your education level when you started at 22?
It's very low. Because the time was maybe close to Sec 3 in Singapore standard.
Right.
Close, huh? They mean not even near there. But it's okay. I mean, to education, as I mentioned to all the, when I did my mentorship, you are not a scholar or you are not a top student, don't worry about it. But you must have one attitude, you know, you must learn.
Right.
You cannot, because you say, I was used to be IT student, or you say, that is end of my, no, you shouldn't think like this, because this is your level.
Mm.
But in life in Singapore, you can divide into three. You can have three ways to be successful in career. One, you go to a public sector. One day, you become the director general or deputy secretary or PMSEC, right?
Right.
Civil servant route. You can also go to private sector, right?
Mm.
So you can become a manager, a supervisor to manager to GM to become the managing director. There's another route, right? In fact, I will prefer to promote on the third one.
Mm. What route is that?
That is the entrepreneur route.
Mm.
What's wrong with this route? This route is not something that is not Bill Gates make it. Bill Gates, I don't think he has certificate as well.
Mm.
If you want to name it Lee Ka Shin in Hong Kong, I don't think he has university.
Right.
Robert Koch, I don't think so.
Mm.
Even Singapore, the richest man, Ng Teng Fong, I don't believe he got a certificate as well.
Right.
There are many, many people make it through the route of this one.
Mm.
So why we restricted ourselves only talk about public service and private sector? You think about entrepreneur way.
Right.
You can always start small.
So what do you think about the education system now? Because just now you talk about the European style where you have options between like your experience route or skills route, and then of course the certification route. And then of course, compared to Singapore, I mean like for myself, I homeschool my kids.
Oh.
Yeah. So my four children, they are homeschooled until a PSLE. So they all take PSLE as a private candidate.
Oh.
Then secondary school, they go back. I mean, our intention is not because we don't like the education system. It's just because we have a passion to spend more time with them, shorten the amount of time in school so that they have a bit more experiential learning. So like my wife will bring them to Science Center and all this kind of stuff. And then of course they will do PSLE. Now they're back in mainstream. My eldest is already in JC. Our family practice is before all my children go for the PSLE exam, daddy will always tell them, if you fail, I'll be very happy for you because you fail early. And I always share with them that even if you fail, daddy is still your daddy. And why do I want to share this with them is because I believe like in Singapore, because of the way that the PSLE secondary school, poly or JC and uni route is structured, sometimes I think people get very anxious that you have to hit all these milestones at the exact age. Yeah. So I share my four kids, like, I have this friend who went through the longest route. I mean, last time there was like primary 8, right? So if you fail PSLE, you need to repeat until primary 8, that means 8 years in primary school. So my friend went through that, went to normal technical, went to ITE, went to army. After that, completed poly, completed degree, and now is a lecturer. But went through an extremely long route.
Oh, yeah.
So I always share this story with my kids that I think, like, you know, everybody have different seasons. Some people need a longer season, but it doesn't mean you're a failure.
Yeah.
Some people have a shorter season, right? So that is my own perspective.
Yeah.
What about you? I mean, what do you think about, because you talk about three routes, right? Public sector, private sector, entrepreneurship. Do you think the education system in Singapore promotes a little bit of risk-taking in entrepreneurship, or it promotes more towards like a stable income route? Like, what do you think?
But I must say something, Melvin. For the people choose the entrepreneur route, you must sell discipline, sell learning. No alternative. Because if you build your empire, you know nothing about balance sheet. You know nothing about deal making. Deal making, you must have some idea about investment banking, how they function. Because investment banking is to help people to do the bridging, the deal between the two. But if you want to expand your business, diversify your business, or you want to go into public, right, you need a bit of understanding about investment banking, how they work.
Right.
When you talk about merger, acquisition, when you're talking about delisting, when you're talking about listing, you're talking about spin off a subsidiary, so when you want to talk about all this language, right? So these are the terms are used in your career, you know. Like me, I gone through almost all.
Right.
From sole proprietor to private limited to listing limited to delisting to merger to reverse takeover. Or general offer. So you see all these terms, right? I've gone through almost all entire in business.
Right.
So, but I learned from the investment banker. I learned from a lawyer. I learned from auditor. So you must have this idea. Can you learn fast enough if you want to charter the big boat?
Right.
You know, right? Small little boat and the big boat. The sampan is quite easy.
Right.
The big one, you better go and take the lesson, you know.
So that means what you're sharing is that if somebody wants to scale or build their business, even as an owner, they have to be humble enough to learn as well as to learn fast.
Absolutely.
Right. How about Josh, on talking about this education portion as well as linking to entrepreneurship, what advice would you give maybe somebody, right, that is in maybe their 30s already? Right, in their 30s, but they always have a passion to want to start something on their own. But maybe they just find that they already start to have commitments, right? They have a family, they have a property already. Like, what advice would you give them in a wisdom point of view? Like, what are some of the key things they want to consider before starting their own business, or how should they navigate this thing? And also, like, do you think somebody in their 30s or 40s versus somebody in their 20s will have more difficulty starting into the entrepreneurship
Very
route.
Good question.
Right.
If you are at your 20, most likely you do not have HDB house, you don't have any mortgage or whatever it is, liability, you don't have much to worry about. So you can say after graduate, you decide to become an entrepreneur, most likely it's better, right? I think it's better. But if you are at the 30s, you have to at least discuss with your missus, if you're married, your spouse, to say that maybe if I'm going to start something, most likely in the first year is a bit challenging. My income is not stable. Can you support a family? You work as a team. You work as a team. If you do not have a child, easier. You can plan a little bit, maybe wait for a year to see how you go. But you need to be honest also. You got to, if you ask your wife to support the family and you are stuck, your business, you got to work very hard. Honestly, tell your wife, I'm going to be work day and night, not every day and night, I mean night at the pub. And then you say, because of the customer at the pub, I'm also at the pub. So that is the wrong thing to do, right?
Mm.
So you promise, you say, I will work very hard. I will make sure all the money I have, I will pour in. I will make sure. Also, you have to tell your wife, I'm going something that I have some knowledge.
Mm.
Promise them you're doing that. So if you focus, you make sure you work hard, you can see one in 3 to 6 months. Actually, you can more or less can see some result one.
Mm.
Because you're familiar with this industry.
Right.
I can't see how far away you can go. So you can see the light is coming. Then 6 months, 9 months later, you say, wow, can. After that, wow, I think can already. When you cost to a certain point, you know you're quite safe already. Because I say you always control your cost, right?
Mm.
That means all the money, profit, you pour into your organization, right?
Right.
That means you can see your capital is increasing. That means cannot go wrong already. All right? You work hard, because you also an employee, you're not an employer. You keep thinking you're a boss, you're in trouble already.
Right.
All right. You keep thinking you're also an employee. So you keep working. Ah, 1 year you can tell your darling, say, darling, not too bad. I'm making 100,000 now. It's not too bad. So your wife will say, okay, lah, don't 100,000, don't go and think about buying the Audi or whatever. Forget about all these things first. Mm-hmm. I don't own a car the first 1, 2, 3 years. I don't.
Right.
Yeah. The first one we bought is a van. It's because of delivery. Because of trading, I need a big van.
Right.
But secondhand one, I bought 3,000 or something like that. So that is my car, dating car also, that one.
Right.
Right. So you have to start something like that. Don't think about funny thing. Preserve your careful and then keep moving up. So I think at the 30, you have to be more consultative. At the 20, most likely you can make a decision.
Right. How about somebody in their 40s?
At the 40, they have another set of problems if they are married, right?
Right.
They have 2, 3 children there.
Mm.
And the cost of living in Singapore is very high.
Right.
If they at the kind of age, most likely the father is also about 60, the parent about 60 to 70.
Yes, you're
they
right.
They have 2 set of problems.
Mm.
One hand is do re mi, they mean it's all your children. One hand is mi re do. Mi re do means your father, mother. If you have your grandfather, mother, you have to bring another one. Right. So you're holding. Then you have a lot of consideration. That's why Singapore sandwich class is very painful.
Mm.
I cannot blame them say that because of these 2 set.
Mm.
Of course, include the marriage.
Right.
At the 40, I would say quite difficult already. Huh? Quite difficult. I'm not saying cannot.
But need to be wise.
Unless you have your missus or your spouse earn quite a fair bit. At the 40, you should be okay. If your wife can earn some decent number, maybe you still can consider that.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, but you have to be a bit more
cautious and more wise.
More cautious, right, at that time. I'm sorry to say that this is the situation you are in.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I mean, based on what I heard, is your advocacy for entrepreneurship is definitely more for the young people.
Yeah.
And of course, I think you're also saying that you have to consider your season in which part of the life that you are in now. And there's definitely nothing wrong with continuing to work hard with a company and all that, depending on your life stage, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. How do you protect your family time? I mean, all these 41 years, you have expanded your business empire. And of course, how much time do you spend on business, family, and kids? And also, do you believe in work-life balance?
For me, because fortunate enough, I don't play golf. That one a little bit fortunate in a sense.
Why is it fortunate?
Because golf, you got to spend a lot of hours, Long hours, you get a long hour. To me, my whole life is my family is my center.
Mm.
Every week, make sure we have this family Saturday or Sunday.
Mm.
All the children's, we are in a WhatsApp chat, right? So who can attend, who cannot attend. So everybody.
How many kids do you have?
4 kids.
Right.
So we have this dinner together. I like the dinner, parent with the children dinner, very important. Then you can see my four children who are a bit noisy. When they're around, they're like bird, you know. But it's okay, you know, as a parent, you just take it at, you know, their community thing between the brother and sister, right?
Right.
So we are with them. Of course, we also talk. We find some places that we can talk, some food that nice we can eat. So this is already our culture.
Right.
Every week.
Every weekend.
Saturday or Sunday.
Right. When did this start?
Oh, long time ago.
Right from the start when you have...
As long as I can remember, I can't remember the date. I mean, it must be very long time.
Right. So you time block your weekend for your family.
Yes, I will try to have at least one meal with my children. So.
Right.
And my wife, Friday, we will, two of us will have a meal together.
So Friday is your date night?
I try to do it every Friday. Try.
Okay.
My best. Yeah, we will eat some food, nice food, two of us, different places. We will budget.
Right.
You know, sometimes it's like that, like, you know, husband and wife, you know, you have something, you know, something you can talk, right?
Mm.
Because the longer you marry, the word is getting lesser, right?
Right.
It's like that. No? So if you're together, there's no other people around, right? Only two of you, right? So you will talk everything under the sun, right?
Right.
So you will talk a lot of things. So that is also good to keep the kind of communication.
Mm.
But not all the family are like this. Of course, I will encourage the family to consider at least one meal.
Mm.
If you cannot do it week, at least do it maybe 1 month, at least one.
Mm.
I feel it's very important, the bonding.
Right. So with your, I mean, like busy schedules, especially during the formation years, I believe like the first 20 years, you travel a lot, your first 20, 30 years and all that. Do you believe in this, I mean, like concept called work-life balance? Like, and how should somebody view it?
I don't call work-life balance because my brain is very focused on my work one.
Hmm.
Even at home, travel, reading, I didn't go too far away from this because I will just keep thinking about my, how I can expand, how can I face this problem, how can I settle this issue. Focus in this area. You ask me, balance, I don't think this is the word I have.
Mm.
But we will travel once a year, the family, all of us try to come together once a year.
Right.
That is the only one. I love it. You ask me now, if I cannot travel with my children yearly, I feel that one will be a very sad thing.
Right.
Yeah, we love it.
Mm.
Because
so we get a point to block out one trip per year.
Yeah, at least one. Right. I think the family should build this thing.
Right.
Or at least once a month have a meal together.
Mm.
I think you will see it's quite an enjoyable thing to do.
Right.
At first you think, are you sure? I've got so much thing to talk. And the kid come along, all use the phone, like that. So you might make a point, don't use phone, please.
Right.
All right. When we are all together, I mean, we talk. So leave the phone one side.
Right.
So this is why I personally encourage doing. So I hope all the family should try to at least do that. But not easy, but you need to start somewhere, right?
Mm.
You need to start somewhere.
Agree. I mean, like for my kids, we started about 2 years back. That when we have meals, everybody surrender their phones.
Yeah, oh, so, wonderful.
Yeah, so all the phones will be in the
good
middle.
Yeah,
we surrender, silent. We call this like now your weapon. Like you don't have your weapon. Like it's like a police officer, right? You don't have your pistol with you.
Yeah.
You feel very, very strange. I want to move into the last part, right?
Okay.
Because I know that, George, you do a lot of philanthropy work. And also when I read up through our research on you. You co-founded Border Mission in 2014. And this is actually serving communities in the very high altitudes in the Himalayan region.
Yes, correct. Right?
And also you are adjunct professor for a university in Nepal. You also founded this BML Manja University. I mean, you have a lot of like emphasis on philanthropy, education as well. Why do you want to go so high up in the Himalayas? I mean, like, what was that motivation?
In 2014, I think I'm 55, right? 55, the year was CPF, you can withdraw, right? I think 55, I'm wrong.
Mm.
So So Lisa and myself say why we were discussing about why don't we set up a foundation for between us. One day I have to pass, right? Mm. So I say, why don't we do something while I'm still around?
Mm.
At the age of 55. So I say, if we can set up this foundation, then we can fund, because we will fund ourselves. So Singapore and Himalaya.
Right.
So we are, Singapore, we do cardboard collectors, the elderly, and the people with disability. So we see, I mean, we saw many, many, many family now in Singapore. Of course, we are the first world. When you look at the people, this group, right? Huh, you feel like you want to do more, you know?
Mm.
Himalaya is the same, because Himalaya is, especially the high altitude area, the village we go. These are the place nobody want to go. Huh?
Mm.
Too far and too
How long do you need to spend to travel there?
You landed in the capital, but you have to travel by car, sometimes a couple of hours to reach the mountain.
Capital of?
Nepal.
Nepal, right.
So we are not only in Nepal, we are in Nepal, we are in Tibet border.
Mm.
We are in Bhutan, we are in Northeast India, Northwest India, and Pakistan.
Mm.
Pakistan quite...
About 7 or 8 countries.
No, total is 5.
Five.
Himalaya is about 5.
Right.
This charitable organization, of course, we support quite a few courses there, huh?
Mm.
Like medical, like education. There are 2-3 university. Because I want to do something with entrepreneurship. That's why I encourage the VC, the vice chancellor, to set up
right. The
institution or innovation or entrepreneurship. So they're very happy. The India BML doing one. This Bhutan, I asked them to set up one, and then Nepal set up one.
Mm.
So I find if entrepreneurship maybe can help them to out of poverty, not all of them, but at least some.
Mm.
Yeah. Nepal, a big problem is the graduate student is without job one.
Mm.
When they graduate, there's no guarantee they will find a job. So I was talking to them, say, why don't you give them another life considerations or entrepreneurship? So we set up that one. So we're doing both country now. Of course, this is a season of my life, right?
Mm.
So I'm from the humblest family, as you know, right? Came an entrepreneur, then philanthropist.
Mm.
My 2016, then I've been here for some time, right? So the country say, can you consider to serve as ambassador?
Mm.
So I took on at an honorary position in 2016. Now, of course, this is there's no salary attached, because honorary ambassadorship basically is non-salary.
Mm.
It's purely on serving the nation.
Right.
I'm happy because I'm holding the 3 role in the last few years. So I can see my life not only talking about entrepreneurship now. I have a chance to talk about philanthropist work and also diplomacy work.
Right.
Diplomacy gave me another kind of exposure. It's linked to my international experience.
Mm.
41-year international experience, as I mentioned, right? From a business also, you meet with all the politics people in China especially. Then you see, as I say, the owner of all the multi-Thai million-dollar company and all the professional, higher professional. This is international space. Now, plus the diplomacy side, you combine the two. So it's very useful. Now I have a private sector's international experience and public service experience.
Hmm.
If I combine together, it's very useful.
Right.
Then you look at both quite differently now. If you only have a public side without a private side, you do not know what idea about the private sector you're talking about. So fortunate enough, I have this experience in international, because of my investment as well, international. So combined together, that is very useful.
Mm.
When I become ambassador, to me, it's quite easy to take on the job.
Right.
Because between the two countries, we're talking about government and government, we're talking about the country and the country relationship. Mm. We also talk about economy of both countries.
Mm.
So we are not only talking about just only the government level. We're also talking about how about your businessman, my economy, your economy. We put together. Wow, beautiful.
Mm.
Because I have a private sector experience, quite easy to put people together very fast.
Right.
So that's one that I like it.
Mm.
So now I begin to feel like, wow, wonderful. I have a private sector international experience. Now I have public service experience also internationally. So I met royal family, king advisor, prime minister, ministers, more than 20 to 30 ministers I met in Morocco over the years. Right. Singapore, of course, I made quite a number also, but bring me in the last two terms, one term about 3 years. I think you combine the two together, it's very powerful.
Mm. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
I have a final two questions.
Yeah, please. Right.
What is the second last question I want to talk a little bit to pick your brains on your perspective about life. What is the meaning of life in your perspective? Like, if let's say one of the younger generation would ask you, what is the meaning of life in your perspective? How would you share?
Course number one is, I will advise you to have a good family. Mm. Number one, without a good family, it's very, very difficult. When I say good family, whether you're single or you're married, you know, hold into this value as hard as you can.
Mm.
I know not easy, right? When we talk, it's easy, but it's not easy. But this is your center.
Right.
You get your family right, a lot of things can sort it out. Then after you set your family, the next thing you're talking about your career, right? Or you say, I want to start my business, right? Or I work in public service or whatever, right? This is second part of it. Whatever gift to you, among the three, right? You choose one. If you decide to be in public office, let it be.
Mm.
And work hard, and then you climb the ladder to reach. There's a level to get in, right? The end of called PUMSEC, right? The DS, you had DG, you had DDG. You got all the position you can still. So private sector also the same. Mm. You can be a supervisor all the way to become the CEO. Entrepreneur, of course, you work hard, continue to build your organization. There are three roads. Don't think about two roads only. Today, I hope this interview is three roads. Then third, as an individual, I always think better build something interest. You must have something you interest. You know, when I was in opera house, of course, when I was young as a village boy, I never imagined this.
Mm.
When I go to opera house, even how tired I is, doesn't matter to me. I love it when the string, you know, when the orchestra play, right, you can see the member playing, right? When Jubin Mehta was in Singapore, one of the best the world conductors for orchestra.
Right.
I can tell you, it's so nice, the music, you know. So, I mean, to me, I'm classical music. Lah, huh? My people, some Taylor Swift, it's okay. Lah, huh? Whatever is fit you. Huh? Jazz is also quite good also. Huh?
Right.
Play, music is good. Huh? So you must have some interest in your life.
Mm.
Not necessarily must be art and music, okay? Can be other form.
Right.
You must have some like this. It will be very nice, I find.
Mm.
Then the most happier thing I see is if I can have two trips of travel in Japan, eat sushi with my family. Wow, that one is the best.
Right.
If you can do that, will be very, very nice. So you balance that in life, right? First, your family. Second, your career. And you must build some interest in something.
Mm.
If you have zero interest in something, not so nice. At the end, you will go into the wrong place.
Right. And all these things contribute to the meaning of life in your perspective.
To me, I think, yes. Some people, of course, got religion also.
Yeah.
So, also play an important part.
Right.
Let's respect each other. Your religion, my religion, his religion. We all respect each other, right? So, that is also another form of, if you have it, good. I think don't view money as everything. This is a very sad thing, I can tell you.
Mm.
The richest people, the plenty of money one, always the one very, sometimes the one very sad. Because they think this is the only one.
Mm.
Well, that is wrong. How far can you go you're rich? You only say, okay, I have a yacht, I have a Lamborghini, a Ferrari, then I have a private jet, I have a 10 carat of diamonds, what else more? Or watches, Miller or something. So how far you can go? You buy this already, you buy this already, you got a private jet already, you got this, you got this. How far you can go?
Mm.
That's the limit you can go. This is only one part of it only.
Mm.
And I, but don't only build this thing all the way. You think you must build this way, you make you more become a more happier person. No.
Mm.
I think you should build your family. If you can afford, of course, good. If you cannot, don't worry about that.
Right.
The car will still send you to Bedok, will still send you to Tampines. Whether a Toyota or Lamborghini was landed in the same place.
Right.
Won't be different one. So if you have some interest, very nice. Fishing, you can do some fishing. Very nice. You go there for ocean for 2, 3 days, 4 days, just fishing with a few friends. Wow, it's a nice thing to do. Mountain climbing.
On your personal side as well.
So right. You have to balance the three. It's my view. Right. Don't only focus on money.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah, I think our audiences will learn a lot from today's segment. Yeah, but we have a final question for you.
Yes, please.
Yeah, just one last question. So we always do these cuts in PLB.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is called the meaning of life, which is why the second last question is about the meaning of life, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I want to invite you to pick a card.
Okay.
Yeah. And just share your question and share your answer.
I need a pair of glasses.
Oh. Okay, I read up for you. Oh, wow.
Okay.
Long question, but can be short
as
well. Okay. So George, name three people you especially admire. And who are these three people? Why did you pick them?
Myself, my wife, we have this charitable organization. We also look at what Mother Teresa had done in India,
right,
to the orphanage. To me, it's a very great thing she had done for all the kid on the street.
Mm.
It's a very simple thing, but to her, it's very meaningful. She devoted her life for the kid who have no dad, who have no mom. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Right.
The second one is from a politician point of view, Indonesia President Jokowi.
Mm.
He from a very humble beginning. He is a furniture maker. I'm a shoemaker. He do furniture. And he got a heart for the people. So he stand for election. People give him a chance. He was elected. He just a furniture maker. But people say we want somebody like him in a small solo area. Subsequently, Jakarta. And after that, he say, I have a heart for the nation. And he proved himself like a people president. The third person, I heard this name a lot, Lee Kuan Chin. The Lee Foundations had donated millions and millions and million dollars to all the good causes, including all the university. It's amazing. In his life, he made a lot of money, and then the fund was used for a lot of good causes in Singapore. Amazing. This was many years ago when he set up this foundation, Lee Foundation. And he continued to donate and continued to donate. In the markets, everybody know Lee Foundation had did a lot for the community. So these are the three.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. Thanks for being here on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think I personally learned a lot. I think our audiences
learn
even more as well.
Thank you.
Maybe. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right.
Yeah, cheers.
Is that recording? No, you're right. No.
It really started the moment you walk in.
Huh? Are you sure?
No, it's okay. Just chat only.